It is June 23rd. This is the Tame Suite. We're doing the Next Gen ICANN with University of Greenwich.
Jeff, shall we start?
Yeah.
Great.
You have to do the announcement.
Okay, great. Good afternoon, everybody. I am Nora Abusita. I am the Vice President for Public Responsibility Programs and Development here at ICANN. I'd like to welcome this distinguished group of students who have dedicated a long time to working on some thesis topics that are very relevant to ICANN and its work. Before we get into their project, I'd like to welcome also Dr. Aaron van Clyten, who had called me maybe 9 months ago to discuss a potential collaboration between ICANN and the University of Greenwich. And to be honest, I was very pleased with this project. We are always trying to reach out to new people to attract them to the ICANN meetings and to the ICANN system. And more importantly, we're trying to reach out to younger people. And so for me, this fell into a lot of our focus areas, whether it's education, next generation engagement. And so we jumped on the opportunity and we worked for 9 months with the University of Greenwich and these great students who were willing to focus their thesis on topics around fragmentation of the internet. In parallel, we had commissioned a study with Boston Consulting Group on the result or the effects of fragmenting the internet. Of course, there were things that the Boston Consulting Group could not cover in the short duration of their study. And so we had given the other topics to these students to study in more depth. So I'm not going to bore you with more background to this. I'm sure you're all looking forward to hearing the findings. And I'll give you the floor. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Dr. Aaron Van Kleiten. I was the overseeing supervisor for this project, and it's my pleasure to introduce the panel and their research to you. As we know and as we've discussed throughout the day and throughout the rest of this week, some European countries and other stakeholders have been somewhat vocal in their opposition to a U.S.-centric internet, even securing the assistance of developing countries in their fight for so-called pure multilateral governance. From this, however, an international discourse developed that can be thought of as a contested space of control and regulation, similar to that of trading zones. The space is constituted by and through large organizations situated primarily in the West that fight for and concede various degrees of power over the internet. Mueller in 2010 argued that the internet wrested control away from nation states and that it made a contribution to a global society by disrupting the regulation of media content by these states. However, even if the states had some interest in reasserting control over its populace through changes in internet governance, the disruption that Mueller refers to would suggest that older hierarchies, such as the traditional nation state, would be supplanted by subnational and supranational scales. In the worst case scenario, the internet would be broken up into several internets, otherwise known as fragmentation or balkanization. In such case, the internet would lose its global nature and be divided into smaller units, each one with a different sets of rules. International cybercrime, securing data across borders, and the protection against terrorism all provide cogent reasons for some states to want to prefer a fragmented internet. The CEO of Kaspersky Labs claims that a fragmented internet would primarily benefit governments and large corporations in protecting themselves. However, the multi-stakeholder model also has its critics. Former President U.S. Bill Clinton, in fact, claimed that although the multi-stakeholder process is ideal, the so-called multi-stakeholders are really just governments that want to control people by restricting their access to the internet. That's somewhat of an extreme perspective. But anyway, it is in this discourse about internet fragmentation, specifically a fragmented domain name system, and its potential consequences that our panel have investigated. Next slide. The team sought to operationalize this debate from four different perspectives. Of course, as we know, the decision to change the internet structure, the governance structure of the internet, is still being discussed. Therefore, their results are in many ways speculative in nature. However, their applications of theories and concepts could potentially open new avenues for discussion on internet governance and new areas of research. With that, I turn the floor over to our first speaker, Jantira Ingaset, who will create a landscape of social and political discourses of internet fragmentation, thereby laying the foundation for the remaining three parts of the presentation.
Thank you, Dr. Aaron. And good afternoon, everyone. My part of the research study is analyzing the social and political impact of a potential internet fragmentation. A discourse analysis was implemented in order to identify the potential winners and losers of internet fragmentation. The analysis focused on discursive data in the social and political forums on the phenomenon of internet governance, security, censorship, and digital inequality. In the recent years, there have been several incidents which have created several debates regarding security and privacy, such as WikiLeaks in 2006 and Edward Snowden in 2013. These have triggered nation states to consider a shift in the internet control. The fact that the US government is the one who ultimately controls the internet is something many organizations and nations find misplaced, as the internet is a global phenomenon which many nations' economy has become increasingly dependent on. The finding shows that other nations wish to shift internet control due to lack of trust and the wish to control cybercrime. There are two contrasting views regarding this shift. Former US President Bill Clinton and a former House Speaker Newt Gingrich are more skeptical to a change in internet governance due to the fact that governments will get more control over internet, over their internet users and what information they can access. The outcome of such move could be what many experts call a balkanization of the internet. The opposing argument comes from Vincent Cerf. He believes that moving toward a more multi-stakeholder model of governance creates an opportunity to preserve its security, stability, and openness. The internet, however, has reached the point where it can be described as the living organism, where everyone can access, produce, and change the content. And any new establishment of internet control must not suppress the free and open nature of the internet. The internet has been one of the greatest tools for freedom since the printing press. The free flow of information and the ability to share ideas over the internet have helped many nations develop. Some dictatorship might not have fallen had the social media tools such as Twitter and Facebook not existed. Take the Arab Spring, for instance. How fast the ideas and thoughts of democracy spread over social media, and how social media was used to organize and facilitate the political protest. Internet censorship comes in many forms. The government can filter and block certain websites to block the dissemination of political opinion, blacklist pornography, or pirate websites. However, the number of governments that block access to information related to politics, human rights, and social issues is increasing. From the report of Freedom of the Internet 2013, it shows that out of 60 countries examined, 29 of them have used blocking to suppress certain types of political and social content. Research shows that more users are being arrested, prosecuted, or put in prison for their posts on social networks or blogs and websites. Countries like China, Iran, and Saudi Arabia have implemented the most comprehensive blocking and filtering technology and are disabled access to thousands of websites. Even democratic countries such as South Korea and India have blocked numbers of websites of political nature. The Freedom of Internet 2013 report claims that some governments may prefer to institute strict punishment for people who post offending content rather than just actually blocking them, as this allows officials to maintain the appearance of a free and open internet while imposing a strong incentive for users to practice self-censorship. As a member of US Congress claims, giving up control of ICANN will allow countries like China and Russia that don't place the same value in freedom of speech to better define how the internet looks and operates. Since the early 1990s, policymakers and rights advocates have worried that benefits derived from information and communication technologies are unequally distributed. Clearly, digital divide is still an important topic in 2014, as in early 1990s. Jan van Dijk identifies three inequalities with respect to the digital divide. The first two are occurring within and among the developing countries, and the third inequality is between developing countries and the advanced economies. My study, however, focused on the gap between the developing and the advanced nations, as well as the increasing gender gap facilitated by the digital inequality. According to International Telecommunication Union analyst Vanessa Gray, the scale of a country's digital divide reflects the condition of its economy. The challenge of building an information society requires political attention, which again requires that the country have the economy to do so. The digital divide may therefore be higher in developing world, where 200 million more men have access to the internet than women. The digital divide in the developing world not only concerns economic and social differences, but also internet gender gap. For example, in the developing countries, the concept of cyberspace cafes have been more popular among men than with women, due to the fact that men have more freedom and ability to spend money on it than women. As a report done by the Broadband Commission show, in the sub-Saharan African countries, only half the numbers of women are connected to the internet than men. In the same report, it is estimated that 60 million females were online in India, compared to 80 million male internet users in 2013. Access to the internet is therefore an important tool to overcome the barriers of illiteracy, poverty, and discrimination. But becoming more technologically skilled can help women improve their education, income, and their role in the society. Knowledge on how to use technology efficiently and safely will help empower women in the developing world. To conclude, the ongoing discussion on a possible internet fragmentation will lead to breakdown of the internet freedom, especially in the authoritarian regimes. Different nations and companies will get a tighter control on how and how much information people will get access to. Therefore, the main loser will be the end users of the internet, as nations will step up their level of censorship and punishment against freedom of expression. The developing world, however, will struggle even more to catch up with the advanced countries, which more likely will find a way around internet fragmentation. Furthermore, the digital gap will increase, where women will be the biggest losers of internet fragmentation. It will be harder for them to improve their income and education, as well as it will be harder for them to overcome the barriers of discrimination against women. With the internet becoming more accessible to new users, predominantly from the developing world, their interests need to be taken into account with respect to the internet governance.
Okay. Do we have questions in between or just at the end?
Afterwards.
Okay.
I think we'll do all the questions at the very end.
The next presenter is Agnes Kuvatsova, who will discuss her findings on the impact of fragmentation on global trading. She does this through simulation techniques using specially designed software to examine relationships between trading blocks. One of the techniques, block modeling, is probably unknown to many of you and, quite frankly, is experimental in nature. However, its parent methodology, social networks analysis, is widely used in the business research to explore relationships among people and or the companies within a network. Agnes, will you tell us more about your study?
Yes. Thank you, Dr. Aaron. As Dr. Aaron introduced, my research study has developed a new method of analysis of trade patterns among countries with the help of using social network analysis and block model analysis to predict scenarios regarding global offline trade after a possible fragmentation. The Boston Consulting Group report from 2014, and I quote, "History offers some lessons and some answers. In many ways, the development of the online economy mirrors the development of the offline economy. Trade on the internet mirrors the development of trade in the physical world," end quote. For this reason, offline trade data has been used as a proxy for this study, as this data is more readily available and complete than online trade data at the moment. My analysis can be seen as a pilot study or exercise, acting as a starting point for this type of research, which includes secondary data collection and working with trade data. The academic literature shows that the internet has a positive impact on international trade. According to Joshua Meltzer from 2014, the internet has a direct impact on economic growth and international trade. The internet can improve productivity growth, efficiency of business processes like communication to suppliers with local and international customers at much lower costs, or cloud computing, which helps to reduce IT infrastructure costs and improve supply chain management, or the basis of innovation, where the internet created more efficient and cost-effective ways to deliver goods and services to customers, like through transportation management system and track and trace the movement of goods. Second slide. Thank you. The Global Orphan Trade Network. One more. Yeah. There are, as you can see, 195 blue dots, which are in social network language nodes in the network, each representing countries from the World Bank database. And the black lines represent the link between the trading link between countries. However, as you can see, the analysis becomes rather difficult because of the complexity of the network. There, I implemented another strategy through block modeling analysis. Using this technique, countries have been grouped together based on three sets of characteristics, which in block modeling language known as partition vectors. These are geographical location, trade organizations, and language. Once I rerun the simulation, the results become more usable. Looking at the first vector, geographical location, the resulting map is shown. Here, the arrows represent the trade between each block. The orange-colored ones, the trade going into only one way, and the red arrows represent bilateral trade. Here, USA and Canada and the Eastern Asian blocks are the most central players in the network, having trade relations with every other block in the network, and their links will not change after a possible fragmentation. The second vector is trade organizations, where countries have been grouped together based on according to their membership of different international trading organizations, for instance, the EU or the NAFTA. Similarly to the previous map, USA and Canada at the bottom, and another group with five countries, Chile, Indonesia, Philippines, Thailand, and China, are the most central players in the network, and which would be the least vulnerable should fragmentation occur. The third and last partition vector is language, where countries have been grouped according to the 10 most widely spoken languages in the world, plus an 11th group, which includes the other languages spoken in the world. The orange arrow, again, represents trade going into one way, and the dark blue colored arrows represent bilateral trade. There are four main players in this map, as you can see. English, Hindi, Chinese, and Japanese are the most central languages in the network, having trade links with every other language. Also, an increased trade can be seen with the Russian-speaking countries. The findings show that more countries will trade with the North Asia after a possible fragmentation based on language. The findings show that offline trade network would not be affected negatively. However, there are some limitations. This pilot study can be further developed and improved if online trade data becomes available, because offline trade data have been used as a proxy for the study. If online trade data will be used, the analysis can be done again with the newly acquired information, since offline trade data acted as a proxy. However, this provides an interesting insight into the relationship that these countries maintain with each other, particularly with respect to language. It also highlights the fact, the importance of the international trade organizations and how fragmentation affects their global positionality.
Artina Dirma is our next presenter. She was very skillful in interviewing state representatives from eight key players in the current internet governance debate. Of considerable interest in her research is the disparity between the words and actions when it comes to countries' preparedness for a fragmented internet. She will now present her findings and discuss the responses to the interviews and the implications of them for the future of internet governance.
Thank you, Dr. Aaron, and hello, everybody. Welcome. As my colleague previously mentioned, there are ongoing discussions regarding the change of multi-stakeholder model among recognized key players of internet governance, including here Brazil and China. Brazil considers a multi-stakeholder model as the best form of internet governance. They claim that internet should serve as a tool for development and that the issues of concern to developing countries, such as infrastructure and capacity building, should occupy the center of international debate. The data derived for this part of the project was from interviews from senior officers of ICT and trade ministries and departments in eight governments, including here developing and emerging economies. Efforts were made to contact the US, Russia and China, but unsuccessfully. There are two parts being emphasized in this part of the project. The part the country's preparedness for fragmented internet and its influence in global trade. Responses collected were from the key players of the industry and also secondary players to reach a general view of the issue. UK representative noted, and I quote, "The strategy of a business is something like an airplane. If it does not move forward, then it will fall off the sky. And it comes even more true with the evolution of the internet." End quote. This shows the extent to which developed countries prioritize internet as a key tool of development, trade development, which has helped the globalization process of opening up the market for anybody to trade anywhere. The importance of internet as a catalyst towards globalization is noticed and supported by all the countries being interviewed. However, Turkey argues that the main concern associated with the internet evolution is cybersecurity, particularly in conducting global business. Therefore, they support internet fragmentation to a certain degree, while Albania and Kenya are using internet for transparency purposes. They argued that a fragmented internet would lead to their being constrained from reaching other countries and businesses' information. On one hand, countries such as Turkey and India claim that they are prepared for a fragmented internet and support the idea that countries have to provide cybersecurity for themselves, their citizens, and their companies. But for sure, the fragmentation has to enable smooth online trading. On the other end, Sweden argues that there are so many different aspects of the fragmentation in different ways that it is difficult to determine the internet fragmentation effects yet. Furthermore, despite the fact that countries did not disclose information during the interview of whatever actions they may be taking, they claimed that each country would do well to prepare for the worst. In this study, the developing countries felt that they would face increased challenges in creating and maintaining their trading image. They would also face additional barriers, which would lead to increased bureaucracy among trading partners, leading to higher costs. This provides additional support to maintaining the current multi-stakeholder approach. A different story emerges with regard to global trade. Different views were expressed that seem to be linked to the country level of development. For example, developed countries such as the UK are more concerned with the side effects of that the fragmented internet would bring, including difficulties to access information, to share it, to have that globalization, and you get to come back to much more fragmented market, so leads in more bureaucracy and slowing everything down. Interestingly, Kenya pointed out that fragmentation in many ways would help to preserve the cultural fabric of the country. Emerging economies responded that a multiple internet might create boundaries between nations, which will hinder the online trade, though few countries believe it as a major concern, but internet fragmentation might hinder the online trade drastically. However, Turkey states that as time passes and as long as solutions are produced, the trading would recover from the effects of fragmentation. The Swedish representative said the following: "Trade is not very sentimental about politics sometimes. The businesses will want to maintain trade. A recent illustration of this is the relationship with Russia and Germany. It should have been affected by the actions of Russia in Crimea. However, due to economic reasons, the trading link has seen no change." In this study, different issues of internet fragmentation were raised through the data collection with the representatives, providing a closer insight of the issue in country level that may be available through written literature already. Considering this, it can be said that the internet will remain untouched and following its current governance structure. different developing level countries support different views. The developed ones are positive that internet fragmentation will not affect any global trading link. The developing economies argue against Westlink that the strong countries will not face any problem due to the fact that they have already created their trading image and are strong enough to overcome any issue of this scale. Most of these key players do not foresee a change in internet governance. Furthermore, the inactivity of the countries signals a de facto approval of the current multi-stakeholder model, drawing one key conclusion. Internet fragmentation would probably not take place, and that a multi-stakeholder governance approach is the best practice. Thank you.
We now turn to the last part of our panel. This is going to be given by Lakmal. He examines companies that operate internationally and the impact that a fragmented internet would have on their business. Recently, as Nora pointed out, a study was conducted by Boston Consulting Group that assessed the extent to which businesses, customers, and others could be inhibited from participating in the global internet economy. They developed an index called the E-Friction Index that categorized 65 countries according to 5 levels of E-Friction, or vulnerability. Lakmal's project built on this index to develop a more nuanced understanding of the vulnerabilities that could occur due to internet fragmentation. He does this by looking at the relationships between parent companies and their subsidiaries. He'll share his research with us now.
Thank you, Dr. Arun, and good afternoon, everybody. I'm trying to identify how companies operating internationally would be affected in a case of fragmentation. So in order to do this, I have selected companies listed in the FTSE 100 index. By default, they're large organizations where operations would be distributed across various locations. Let me quickly explain how I approached this question. Parent subsidiary data was downloaded from the Orbis database for the FTSE 100 companies. They were then organized based on turnover and categorized based on operating structure, also known as typology. I'll explain it a bit more further. So 5 companies were selected from each typology, and I looked at the following. I looked at the typology itself, the industries where they operate, and the characteristics of subsidiaries, such as location of the subsidiaries and the industries that the subsidiaries operate in. Finally, by using a weighted average for location and industries, a risk factor was calculated. My part is different from the previous discussions that were made because my colleagues discussed the effects on fragmentation on countries or their discourse as the unit of analysis. With this part, however, the businesses became the unit of analysis in understanding how they might be affected. International business will operate in different countries for various reasons, such as gaining competitive advantage in the value chain or expansion due to growth. Whatever the case, for those companies to be effective and efficient, it's important that communication and transactions are not hindered at any point throughout the network of the company. This may be within borders or across borders. So let me explain the organizational structures or typologies which I mentioned earlier. This comprehensive analysis, that you can see, was carried by 2 individuals named Bartlett and Goshal in 1989, where they argued that companies operating internationally will fall into one of the following categories: international, global, multinational, or transnational. So from these 4 types, the transnational companies are extremely decentralized in nature, and the subsidiaries remain more independent and less reliant on the parent company to make corporate decisions. Multinationals, on the other hand, are also decentralized, but they rely on the central office to make strategic decisions. Based on the characteristics of these typologies, it's safe to theoretically argue that multinational companies would be the most affected in the case of fragmentation due to its decentralized nature as well as the reliance on corporate headquarters. This was also something that I looked at. So the E-Friction Index. This E-Friction Index has been mentioned before a couple of times. It's the guide that I have used in order to identify the risk associated with location of these subsidiaries. In this is an index created by the Boston Consulting Group earlier this year, where they analyzed 65 countries to understand different types of friction that prevents countries, companies, and consumers from realizing the internet's full benefits. With the final result, they grouped countries into 5 categories based on the e-friction level. These categorizations have been incorporated into this study to enable me to identify the risk based on the location of these subsidiaries. However, The question still remains as to how effective this index alone is assessing in how companies would be affected. Next slide, please. So, let's look at Vodafone's location-based risk. Can you rewind the previous slide? Sorry. Thank you. The vulnerability wheel here. Next slide. The vulnerability wheel here explains that. Can you go back to the previous slide? Yeah. Sorry. Right. I'm looking at the example from one of the pre-mentioned typologies. I'm looking at the global companies, which I mentioned before, out of the four. I can see that Vodafone is on the top of the list of the companies that are here. They've got the highest overall risk value of 11.44. It also has the highest value for location-weighted average. The fourth column on the slide is the industry-weighted average. It's calculated by using various industries that the company subsidiaries operate in. By considering industry operations in its preliminary stages of production, I have assigned a score between 1 to 5 for each individual industry. I'm considering 10 industries, which are ranging from 0 to 9. Overall risk values are calculated based on the weighted average of location, industry, and then the risk associated with the industry of the parent company. As it can be seen, industries such as communication and finance have a higher risk factor than, say, mining. Let's look at Vodafone's location-based risk. This vulnerability wheel reveals that 77% of Vodafone subsidiaries are located in countries associated with a low e-friction, low or low and medium e-friction value. That is the 66% and the 11% in the wheel. The remaining 23% is within medium to high-risk locations. Therefore, in terms of location alone, you might think that Vodafone can be seen as a company that will be minimally affected by fragmentation. However, location is only one aspect of the company's strategy. Looking at the next slide, we will see a different story altogether. In here, Vodafone has been analyzed based on the industry classification in conjunction with their location. So each ring in the wheel represents an industry where Vodafone is engaged in. For example, the innermost ring is tied to industry number 3 on the table, which is manufacturing. The full explanation of these industry classifications can be found in the report. The industry classifications, like I mentioned before, range from 0 to 9. And in the case of Vodafone, they don't operate in industries 0, 1, or 2. The top row of numbers represent industries on the table. In the case of Vodafone, majority of Vodafone's in subsidiaries are within industry classifications 4, which is communications. In other words, 114 out of 244, or 46% of subsidiaries operate in communications. The next significant portion of subsidiaries of Vodafone are within industries 7 and 8. On the table, we can see it as 53 and 58 companies in total. 7 and 8 represent industries, namely finance and insurance, and services. All three of these industries, which are communication, services, and finance and insurance, are most likely to be affected if fragmentation was to occur due to the nature of the industries. If we bring location into this, of the three previously mentioned industries, the majority of subsidiaries that engage with communication, finance, and services are located in countries associated with a low e-friction value, level 1 on that table. In essence, though, 225 subsidiaries, 92% of Vodafone's 244 subsidiaries are operational in industries that are at risk if fragmentation was to occur. So you can see by looking at location alone, it showed that Vodafone would not be affected as much, but by incorporating the industries that the subsidiaries operate in and the company operates in, we can see a better picture. Next slide, please. Okay. My colleagues and I took different approaches to creating the body of research. In the beginning of my presentation, I made a theoretical argument that multinational companies would be the most affected in the case of a fragmented internet. But after conducting this preliminary study, the relationship between the structure of companies and how they get affected was indeterminate, mainly due to the complicated nature of networks that these large companies operate in. Essentially, companies operating in a structure similar to the web, just like the internet itself. However, it is safe to say that regardless of company structure, all companies operating internationally will be definitely affected. Also, during the preliminary stages of this process, I conducted pilot interviews in the public and private sector to shape the scope of this study. The main concerns expressed by them were related to the data security, replication of software and hardware, and communication and data security across multiple locations. Countries that were interviewed by Urchina showed a lack of action towards supporting a fragmented internet, which in turn supports the existing multi-stakeholder approach of the governance of the internet. One of the reasons why countries are not positive against the fragmented internet was because they believe that online trade would be highly affected based on the level of economic development of the country. The Boston Consulting Group said that the internet mirrors the development of trade in the physical world. And Agnes's simulation showed that the trading patterns of the main blocks will not be affected in the case of fragmentation. Example, US and Canada, Eastern Asia, and the EU will remain the same and they would not be affected. North Asia, however, would be positively affected in a fragmented internet. Lastly, if fragmentation occurs, Janthira showed that the main losers would be the end users of the internet, mainly due to constraints on freedom of expression. And in the developing world, they would be the ones who would be most affected, as the developing world will have to try to catch up to the developed world without sufficient resources. There is a large proportion of users still with no access to the internet. So the future of this multi-stakeholder model will need to incorporate more stakeholders, particularly from developing countries, and cater to their needs as well. Thank you for listening. Thank you.
Okay, well, we can open the floor up for questions from both in-house and hopefully through remote access. We'll see what comes through. Any questions, please, for the panel? Yes.
Okay. My name is Warabilia Modongo. I'm from Botswana. And I have two questions that I'd really like to pose back to the podium over there. The first question that I have regards to internet fragmentation has this regards to the presentation. Did you consider the sluggish penetrations of the internet with regards to the cost of connectivity for developing countries?
Thank you for that. No, because we actually just look at it from political and social perspective from stakeholders who are interested in this topic. And my data was collected from speeches, hearings, and internet forums, and the cost of the developing world connecting to internet was not mentioned in any of the data I found.
Okay, but
when the BCG report was created, they incorporated that in one of the frictions that people would face in terms of infrastructure. That was incorporated in the fourth part for businesses, but not necessarily in the social political aspect of it.
Okay, but does that have to do with the civic society itself? Because I want to believe that different governments develop the internet policies, of which I believe they have an impact to the civic society and the multi-stakeholders. Then what is the relationship between the civic society and the multi-stakeholders that you have made the interviews to?
Sorry, I don't know if I understood the question right. So you want to make the link between the civil society and the policy making in the governmental board?
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so the scope of the study was a general one, including the fact that what the country's views were on internet fragmentation and how they actually see it and if they are taking any actions regarding to it.
Mm-hmm.
And the civil society part, I mean, we didn't look in deep to it because it wasn't the scope of the study. However, it is mentioned on most of the studies, especially to the developing worlds, mostly than developed ones, because they don't face that issue as much as developing ones, that's the main priority. The fact that they have to build the policies of internet based on the civil society needs and necessities regarding to a development of social aspects of the country. I don't know if that answers your questions.
Yeah, I think that's better. Thanks.
Thank you.
Great. We'll move on to any other questions. Yeah, please.
So thank you. My name is Paul Moshene. I'm an ICANN fellow from Kenya, and I just wanted to comment on maybe something that you maybe didn't look, but I think is important, is did you have time to look at the alternative route, DNS? For example, if instead of going through ICANN's route and trying to actually resolve and get the resources I want online, I use other maybe alternative route systems and how these ones can actually impact, because technically they fragment the unified route. And a good example of this is the Tor. And it uses Onion Protocol, and you may find that if you go to Tor, you can be able to access sites that are not actually, you can say, legitimately under the ICANN route, and these are the .onion sites. And of course, we've already seen what some of them have. Some actually have it used for legitimate uses, like hiding dissidents from persecution, and others are also used to sell drugs and other things. So maybe I just wanted to hear your perspective. Did you actually look in this? Because it's a very interesting issue.
Just one. When you mentioned DNS fragmentation, actually that's when we focus on. So if you're saying that we should have looked on a different aspect of the DNS, like getting access to the information or different route than through ICANN, actually our study focuses on the fact that should we fragment these DNS or not. So should DNS be fragmented? In the sense that if we're looking at a different route, it means that we're looking at the internet fragmentation, like having a different route means in DNS fragmentation. So this study is showing that the general overview of it is that whether this DNS fragmentation would be a positive or a negative approach of the future of the internet. So what we found out is that DNS fragmentation would lead to a lot of consequences, including social ones and economical ones as well. I don't know if that helps. So we weren't actually into DNS different route success.
But I think also we didn't look at Tor or the deep web, as everybody else knows it, too much. But it does help with things like the growth of Bitcoin. Users want to remain anonymous. Those kind of things are impacting how the future of the internet evolves. However, we didn't go into that much detail into looking at how these alternate routes, what the costs are, and how it will impact the governments or countries. We didn't.
Are there other questions, please? Yes, again?
Okay. I kind of a bit, should I say, with regards to your research, I think it was just too narrow, such that you're focusing on certain very critical aspects and leaving such or some of the important aspects, of which I think they could have added much value to the research. I mean, I see your study being one of the diverse and open studies, and I really wish you could expand it to cover lots of areas.
Just to respond to that, and then we'll come to you. This initiative is called the client-based dissertation, which the University of Greenwich Business School have started, and many other business schools use it also. And so it's very much tailored to the client's needs, and the client was ICANN in this case. So there was a very specific mandate that came through from the client that they wanted us to investigate. Now, from the initial conversation that we had with Nora and Nigel, who's gone, the project did evolve as information became clearer and so on and so forth. And I think both the points that were mentioned just now and the the alternative means that you mentioned will contribute to broadening the research down the road, and I'm sure that some of this will be picked up.
You took the word out of my mouth. But foremost, above all, is I want to appreciate the fact that you did a good job at presenting to us. For the novice and the all, you would have educated us one way or the other. So I want to say a big thank you for that. And no question.
Are there any other questions? Yeah, go ahead.
Hi, you know me. I'm Hui Fen, and I'm from Singapore. So we've heard a lot, especially this morning at the intergovernmental meeting about intergovernmental governance. I don't know if your research looked at all into what forum or what group is best for enforcing internet governance, because you can have multi-stakeholders, but somebody has to do the work in the end to implement the proposals. So did you look at that at all?
Do we need clarification? Can you just repeat the actual question? Sorry.
So my question is, did your research also manage to look into which forum or which multinational group or organization would be the most appropriate or in the best position to implement any proposals that come out from the multi-stakeholder forums?
Okay, well, I hope I got that question. We didn't have, as Dr. Aaron said, the limitation of the study was actually really, really limited, considering the broad subject, and it's like an ongoing discussion regarding this topic. So it's not that we are not specialists about it, but when it comes to governance of the internet, we can say for sure that the what we found out through the research that we've done is that the best approach in practice is that the governance of internet should go through, as you said, an intergovernance, in the fact that different countries should have the same level of decision power, so that power would lead to a collaborative decision in the end to take the right approach for policy making for future internet management. I don't know if that answers that question, but...
Not quite, but we can take it offline.
Okay.
Any other questions? Yes, please.
Hello, everyone. This is Sunny. For the last speaker, I find this very interesting. You mentioned that the structure, the industry, or the location of an international business was being affected by the fragmentation in different regards. So, and also for the first few speakers, you also mentioned about the economic links between different economic blocks. So, do you see any correlation between the first part and the second part of the research, which is like, because some of the business chose not to start their subsidiaries in certain locations, and this is one of the reasons making that some of the trade link less effective after this fragmentation happened?
That's definitely a very good question. From what I looked at companies listed in the UK, and it was quite limited in terms of where the subsidiary... I mean, it was in various locations, but I didn't... because it's UK-based companies, and the primarily most of the subsidiaries remained in countries that were on low friction or more with a lot more infrastructure or with a lot more support in terms of the internet. There definitely will be a link between the economic development, because online trade... A large part of online trade would also be related to subsidiaries and the parent companies, transferring of money and all of that. But it wasn't. We didn't look into that detail or the correlation of it.
I think another point that I think you're mentioning is that there is some, because of the selections already made before the supposed fragmentation would occur, that would already put certain types of companies on a different trajectory because of the location choices that they made due to whatever risk assessments they did in the beginning, correct? Something like that. Yeah, so I think there is some scope for correlation between Agnes's part in looking at how the new structure of global trade would occur and how that would affect the companies, the FTSE 100 companies that Lakmal looked at. But then that's further down the road. Yeah. Yeah, I'm sorry. Any other questions? What time are we okay for time?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Are there any questions online? Okay. Okay. I don't know if that's good or bad. Fine. Yes, go ahead.
Yes, my name is Martin. I'm from Argentina. Usually, internet fragmentation is usually discussed under the net neutrality scope. My question is, do you believe that the fragmentation is going to decentralize commerce, is going to prevent competition issues, or is going to allow the monopolies or the more dominant part to extend their power? Is it clear?
So one point which I would say to answer your question is that if fragmentation would occur in the future, obviously it would make the internet a decentralized system. Obviously that would give place for monopoly and other types of competition. Obviously inside the trading blocks which I identified, even though it can be geographical location or trade organizations, I mean, I'm sure it would definitely affect competition in terms of whether increasing or decreasing competition inside one block. It might increase national businesses, how they grow, or international. For example, take the EU, the European Union. I mean, countries in that block, they will definitely trade with each other inside the block, even though if fragmentation would occur, they would not trade with blocks outside of the EU. So I'm sure it would make, at the beginning, some monopoly issues, but after a time, I'm sure they would solve the problem inside the block.
Also, Laura Donardis, who's an American academic, wrote about one of the four types of blocks that the governments would be able to do. And one of them was this very one that you're alluding to, that mentioned that you then cut off international companies, foreign companies, from competing in your markets, and you would be, with a fragmented internet, you'd be much more effective at doing that, the state would be. Whether that's good or bad, of course we know that that's an inefficient result, because that led to import substitution back in the 1920s and so on, particularly in the colonial countries. But yes, I think that's a very good point. I think there was another hand over here, yes?
Hi, João from Brazil. It's more like a provocation than a question. But so, of course, we are in an ICANN meeting. And sometimes a global internet looks like a dogma. Sorry, a dogma. And so my provocation would be, is there anything good about fragmentation? Is there anything positive about balkanization?
Hello. We've been quite negative, let's say, probably from our research with all these negative aspects of internet fragmentation. However, there are some good positive sides of it. Obviously, everything's got bad and good sides of aspects. When it comes to internet fragmentation, even though not a lot of countries supported it, especially on my research, in the beginning it may preserve the cultural aspect of it, as I mentioned, especially for developing world when they don't probably have the right sources to protect their own culture, and it gets usually internationalized by other cultures as well. And then another aspect is the local or national economy, not economy, but trading, business, doing business, because the small companies or small businesses would increase, as they would be a more opportunity for them to operate within the country rather than selling their goods in cheaper prices to bigger corporations. However, these are only, let's say, short-term aspects of fragmentation, because if you see to them in a long aspect of it, in long future aspect, it's obviously that local business that will grow in 5 years, let's say, will be good, like a booming of the country, it will slowly go down, because not all the countries have the potential or the to have their economic growth based on only national products and services. And the internet fragmentation would lead to lots of barriers, especially on doing international business, as we said, especially during between the blocks. So if you see that in a general view, in a long-distance view, we'd say that the internet fragmentation positive sides would be really minor. So.
And also, in my opening introduction, I mentioned that things like international cybercrime and securing data and these kinds of things would actually be much easier for countries if they had, if the states had control over the borders. But again, at what cost is the real question. So there are some kind of smaller benefits, but they're certainly largely outweighed by the cons, so to speak. Go ahead.
Okay. I'll just add to that. Maybe one good example of fragmentation is Tor. And having an onion site, it hides or gives anonymity. So you can actually see fragmentation in a positive light if it's going to give anonymity. But at what cost? Because one of the biggest problems with a fragmented internet is that basically you'll be taking us back to the age of the phone line, whereby if I needed to actually get abroad, I needed to pay maybe some carrier charges, and that is one thing. So you'll not actually have a very, very good online experience. So you may have maybe a situation whereby if I wanted to go to Google, I'll incur a cost. I mean, nobody wants that. You want to just go and Google straight away and get what you want. So in the long term, I think it's negative most of the time, but there are also some positive areas where fragmentation may also be necessary in order to actually protect maybe some kinds of dissent, and where you don't want maybe perhaps a country that is censoring. And that's how I look at it.
Good. Time? Do we have time for a couple of more questions? Yes.
Hello, my name is Adrián Quesada Rodríguez. I'm from Costa Rica. And I really don't have a question. I just would like to commend you on the interdisciplinary approach of your investigation. I have been investigating from the political and legal side of things for a long time, and I've noticed that not having the ability to create my own software and to do some research based on the pure data has really limited my ability to do some extensive conclusions. So I'm really impressed by the approach that you have taken, and I would like to really congratulate you.
Yeah.
Just a contribution. My name is Akimbo Cornerstone. I'm from Nigeria. And I want to agree a little and disagree a little with the conclusion that considering the fact that we are here because of the next generation, and, you know, in the next generation, we won't be thinking about the hiccups we're having now because we would have had a lot of research documents, either in actions or history to compare. The political and social landscape, for example, would have also changed. And so we'll be talking about a new approach to fragmentation, internet fragmentation, that by the end of the day, we'll be coming close to what we need to fragment, what we need not to fragment. I think that should be our take home. I hope you understand that.
I wanted to add to that, actually, because you said that what we need to fragment and what we shouldn't. The fact is that how do you know what to fragment? That's the question, because it's not, I mean, there's been a lot of debates regarding that topic, but the problem is that how do you know how to fragment and what should you fragment?
Okay, thank you very much. Now, because the whole idea about writing document, doing presentation, from where I come from, is called scholar's work. A scholar's work always has an advantage and a disadvantage. Now, you are the first set of people who have written it. Fortunately, you have done a good job, and in 2-3 years, we'll still be looking at it. But one thing is positively sure, we'll always get to a divide where we'll be able to say, this is what we should fragment, this is what we shouldn't tamper with, so that we can bridge the gap and not go back to the cold, old age. I hope you get that.
Yeah?
Thank you.
Good. Was there a hand on this corner here? Yes? Go ahead.
Hi, Jason Hines from Barbados.
in terms of the question as to what to fragment or not fragment, I thought, I'm not advocating any fragmentation of the internet, but certainly in terms of the provision of services and content, there's a lot of stuff that countries could do well with having more local providers of. So, for instance, instead of having a large developed country offering an email service for everyone all over the world, it would be so great if, there were very well-developed local email service providers that were as efficient and reliable and full-featured, etc. And that could be used for local communication to stay essentially local within the country, and then there would be less of a, say, security problem if it traversed borders and people are able to, say, manipulate the case where it might be here now, the provider base in a large developed country and compromise the security of those people all over the world, for instance. So there are opportunities in the provision of content and services where, you know, some of that could be more local, and that would develop the internet economy in the individual countries.
Okay, very good points. Any other comments from the room?
Thank you.
Okay, well, I think we can conclude our discussion today. I think it's been very useful, and sorry, was there? Oh, yeah, oh, sorry, go ahead, Jeff.
That's okay. I wanted to thank everybody for coming, and just to quickly let you know that the slides, as well as the report, are going to be available on the London 50 website now that this has happened. I also wanted to quickly pass it over to Lauren.
Hi there. My name is Lauren Allison. I am the Development and Public Responsibility Program Manager here at ICANN. So I'm a few steps down from Nora, but she's just asked me to conclude and point out a few things. I just wanted to thank you guys very, very much. That was a wonderful presentation. I don't know if you guys have published the report just yet, but I can tell you it's about 100 and how many pages long?
80.
It's not 80? 80 plus the appendix. So it's really, really fantastic, fantastic work. This is actually part of a bigger initiative we're doing called Next Gen. We have a couple of Next Gen people here. Can you raise your hand if you're Next Gen? So they wear all in purple shirts, but I see they're slowly dropping. but we've actually got people asking for the purple shirts now as well. And it all falls under development and public responsibility, which we will be exploring at a session on Wednesday, 1 o'clock in the Windsor Suite. So it'd be fantastic if you could come along. This has been a really great session. And I'm just going to sort of finish with handing over to Jeff. He's our online learning specialist. He runs all of our online learning platform, and he has facilitated this event. So thank you very much, Jeff. And if you just want to close by saying just what NextGen is, how it started, and what's next for NextGen.
The audience is getting more than they bargained for. So NextGen is basically, just the 30-second version, a group of 18 to 30-year-olds that ICANN is engaging with in the particular region that the ICANN meeting is happening at. So all these members are from the United Kingdom and the surrounding region. And so obviously we'll be doing this again in Los Angeles, and so we'll be seeking members of that group from North America. So if you see something about NextGen or you think that'd be a program that you're interested in, feel free to apply. But that's it. Are there any further questions? No? Okay, great. Thank you all for coming.